Just going to run this dog to see if we can find any type of human remains that are left.
Listen to Where Secrets Go to Die, The Disappearance of Derek Hennigan. From the Detroit Free Press, a new podcast set in the woods of Michigan's Upper Peninsula. Available on Apple, Spotify, Freep.com, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Gator Sports Podcast, brought to you by the Gainesville Sun and Gatorsports.com. This is a USA Today Network production, and your hosts, Graham Hall and David Whitley.
I am your host, Graham Hall, joined to my left by my co-host, David Whitley.
Good afternoon,
and
good evening.
We are going to recap, ladies and gentlemen, Florida's orange and blue game. The first one of the Billy Napier regime. I love that word, regime.
Regime. Of course,
so regal.
And we can go with the regime change we just had here.
Yeah, we did. Absolutely. Going from Dan Mullen to Napier, a lot of changes we've seen over the spring. That buzzword structure, player experience. We've heard them for 15 spring practices. And now we get to talk about the two-hour game that unfolded Thursday night in the Swamp. To recap, the Gators moved the game from Saturday to Thursday night to avoid the Easter weekend. The primetime showing was, I think, kind of, I think it was a success.
A qualified success, but, you know, some people will look back and say, gosh, I missed the tradition of Saturday and making it like, you know, typical Florida weekend,
sweating
Florida football weekend, showing up with your RV and, you know, camping out, you know, night before.
6 a.m. on the lawn.
Yeah, that whole thing. You can't do that with a Thursday night game.
Yeah.
But all in all, I think it was a nice change. And, you know, the ultimate, I think, barometer would be how many people showed up. And, you know, they claim 45,000. If I resume my concert pianist career and get paid per ticket or per supposed person in the seat, whoever estimated that crowd Friday night or last Thursday night to be that person, because I'll make $1 million, you know, just because I think it was, what'd you say, maybe 30% inflated?
I would probably say it was about 33% inflated. I was thinking 30,000. And they were slow arriving. I think that is a Florida trend that Billy Napier would like to dissipate, go away here in Gainesville, is the late arrival of students. They did eventually fill in pretty well.
Yeah, it looked, you know, it's funny. It started at 7:30. About 7 o'clock, I looked around and I said, man, this is going to be, laying an egg.
Yeah.
Because there are, you know, 5,000 people there.
I was worried too.
But once it got going, you looked around and said, you know, this isn't bad. I mean, it was probably, the bottom bowl was probably about 2/3 full. And, you know, the ultimate, another ultimate gauge is, were those recruits impressed? And I think if they went to that game, and you know, there's something about a nighttime atmosphere that beats a daytime, I think, you know, and it's more of a party feel. And I think with the band and all that, that, you know, recruits had to look around and say, yeah, this isn't bad. Especially, I don't know what a lot of other teams had, because there were a lot of spring games this past Saturday, but I know Bama had like 20,000 or something.
Yeah.
And, I mean, of course, it's Bama, but I don't think things are bad in Tuscaloosa. But, you know, when Nick first got there, Saban, it had 90-some-odd thousand. And I think, you know, people are just sort of, show me something.
I think it only really, really matters long-term from a recruiting aspect. If you can't get recruits to campus, especially after, to use the word again, a regime change, when there's all this excitement in the building and people want to be there, there's no apathy. If you can't get recruits in the building, especially at a place like Florida, you, I think, are indicating that you're either doing something wrong or you're not putting in the effort that you should be putting in. And we know that Billy Napier has hit the ground running, so I was thinking there would be 250 recruits there, 200. There were apparently 350-plus recruits in the building.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I saw the line to get in. When I'm walking up to the stadium, it was past the bowl gator of people trying to get in there, parents, kids. and former players talking to staffers, looking to get in the building. And I thought that was a really, really promising sign.
Yeah.
We went over some of the top recruits that were there. Cormani McClain, the number one cornerback in this class, has the Gators near the top of his list. Aiden Mizell, Mpemba, all those names are on Gatorsports.com. But the amount of guys that they got on campus, the 2024 kids, I'm sure 2025 prospects, and then the 2023 prospects in this class, I thought that that was just the biggest success long-term for this team that you could glean from the weekend.
And that wouldn't have happened had it played on Saturday, because some of those guys would have been at the Georgia game, some would have been at the Alabama game, so you know, at the Miami game. So, I mean, you know, in a way, it's easy. Let's hit Gainesville on the way to Tuscaloosa or to Athens and just see what they have going.
Yeah, it's a good point. And those who did attend and made the decision to come out for a Thursday night game, whether they had to work the next day or they made the trip to Gainesville from somewhere nearby, got to see Anthony Richardson further grip a stranglehold, let's call it that, on that starting quarterback job. I got to say, last year, we reported it how it was, the two-quarterback system that Dan Mullen planned to use. It's so refreshing, in a sense, to see that Napier hasn't said it, that Anthony Richardson really, really appears to be the number one quarterback moving forward after what he did. Completed 75% of his passes, had three touchdowns, one with his legs. I just thought he looked so good on Thursday night. He made a couple bad throws I'm sure he would like to have back, but overall, you had to be really impressed with what the redshirt sophomore showed.
Yeah, it's hard to gauge because the defense and weight, there was no rushing or no blitzing and stuff like that. But that said, he was going against their number one defense, and the fact that they never stopped him. And I'm not saying him, of course, it was the team, but you could see the difference in that offense when he was in there versus everybody else. I mean, he is obviously the MVP of this, or he, you know, whatever they do is going to ride so much on his shoulders. And you're right, he looked much more at ease and back looking at his reads and stuff like that, confident in the ball. Yeah, just from a physical standpoint, he's obviously head and shoulders above everybody else there. That's no knock on them. He's just that gifted as an athlete. And people would say if he can figure it out, you could see he's figuring it out. And I don't think anybody could come away from that game feeling, I don't see him getting better. I'm worried, blah, blah, blah. Now, I think there's certainly something to get optimistic about and be optimistic and something to build on all summer, because, I mean, he did pretty much everything you'd want him to do. I mean, sure, there were a couple of bad passes, but, overall, he was what, like you said, 75% of his passes were complete, and, he showed the wheels again. He's healthy now. So I think anybody would feel good about the starting quarterback. The rest mixed bag. Miller had some moments, but he obviously is the number two guy. Like you said, there will be no two QB system this year. It's live and die with AR.
Yeah, I think that Miller performed admirably. Let me say that. I think that coming in and only having not even 4 months in the system, transferring to Ohio State, and really kind of ascending over two guys that had more time in the building in Carlos Del Rio Wilson and Jalen Kitna. He didn't look bad, completed 57% of his passes. He had that one interception there. I think that it would have been more concerning if Jack Miller had come out and looked as good as Anthony Richardson, because then you're going to have this whole, I don't know if it's a controversy in a sense here, but you're going to have this talk of, I mean, hey, are they going to split reps going into fall? Yeah. Or is there going to be, no, now Anthony has a chance to go out with the wide receivers in the summer, work with those guys and really grow as a leader. Not to say he's a quiet guy, but he really is a reserved presence at times, and they're going to need him to step into more of a vocal role. And now that he's being propped up as the number one guy, I think it's going to be easier for him to do that heading into summer. And I think the entire team offensively will benefit as a whole if he can do that.
Yeah, it's funny. After the game, we were all down there, and they were gathering in the press area, Napier's up to giving his spiel for about 10-15 minutes. I mean, and the players are waiting, and Anthony was sitting over to the side, and I happened to just be one of the late, so I was sitting pretty close to him. And when Napier starts talking about him in the glowing terms he did, and I could just you know, maybe I'm just hallucinating, but I could just sense he was, you know, he was almost speaking to Anthony and saying, you know, this is your team. You know, it's up, you know, you have to take responsibility. You have to be a leader, you know, and he's building him up to do this because he's no longer, you know, just the kid from Gainesville High showing up on campus. He's been here 2 years now. He's been out there under the gun and all that. So it's him. It's funny. I remember when the Gators won their 06 championship the next day, you know, Leak was gone and Urban had his press conference earlier that morning. Everybody was all, you know, hung over, including Urban, I think. And Tebow, of course, was just the flashy kid that, you know, during the jump passes and all that, but nobody really know. And somebody asked about the QB situation the next year, and everyone says, "Oh, this is Tebow's team." Says, you know, he made it plain, this is him. And of course, it was Tebow's team for the next 3 years. And I think that not that there's a question, but for him to say that, and I think it resonated with Anthony. And you know, conversely, I think we'll bring up it's not really the elephant in the room. Let's say it's called the dodge in the room, you know, that broke the next day about his speeding ticket, you know, and how I think, and he said as much, you know, that he felt bad about, you know, because he's the face of the team, and the face of the team can't, you don't go off and do things that embarrass the team. And, you know, arguably, if you're the face of the Florida football team, you're the face of the University of Florida.
Yeah, it's a really good point. I think that in the day of the transfer portal, you have less of a responsibility or a need as a head coach to come out there and be like, so-and-so is my guy moving forward, because you don't really need to make it such a premature commitment to someone who maybe is going to let you down, and now you look disingenuous in a sense here. They know that now that spring has been completed, that Anthony Richardson is going to go into the summer as the guy. So it makes complete sense for Napier to say what he did about him at the conclusion of spring. You brought up the speeding ticket that came out, so we got to, of course, talk about it. For those who don't know, Anthony Richardson was ticketed for going 105 miles per hour in a 60 mile per hour zone on April 4th. About 10 days.
Yeah, the Monday night before the Monday week before the game.
The week before the game, 10 days before the game. And he did tell UF's coaching staff about this ahead of time, so they didn't get blindsided by the headlines. I don't think his teammates all knew the situation. Again, this wasn't like the guy is going to face criminal charges. I think we got to make that really clear here. He's not going to face anything more than going in front of a judge, paying a fine, and getting a couple points on his license. I think making that stipulation is really important, because anytime you see the headline of 105 miles per hour, especially after we have had a rash of high-profile, high-speed incidents that have at times ended in death, not to, you know, bring up Henry Ruggs and anything, but I think a lot of people are just more concerned right now about players with a lot to lose going at a high rate of speed. And so you're having Florida fans, clearly, I think, upset at the situation, worried about Richardson's safety, worried about him putting himself at risk. And there was a situation here 15 years ago involving Dante Anderson, star at Eastside High School, the same high school that Richardson went to, who lost his life in a crash right outside this Gainesville Sun building. So I think that based on the context, you're seeing a player who just got a speeding ticket facing a lot of criticism because of the pedestal that Napier put him on, because of the circumstances surrounding what has happened in Gainesville, and because of how much Richardson has to lose based on what we just saw. It's become a storyline after the game now.
Oh, and as well it should have. You know, there's a lot of pushback that, it was just a speeding ticket. You know, it wouldn't have been news. It shouldn't have been news. It was a non-story. Well, I wrote this, you know, had I been speeding, you been speeding, it wouldn't have been news. Or, you know, 99.9% of the fans out there, it wouldn't have been news. But if it's the starting quarterback at the University of Florida doing 105 in a 60-mile an hour speed zone, it's news. It you know, for better or worse, what you do is magnified at the University of, if you're the starting quarterback
right.
at Florida.
That's the truth.
And it's not just, I mean, any celebrity. You know, if Joe Schmo, you know, gets arrested for whatever, you know, it's a big, if Ron DeSantis does, it all depends on the amount of interest people have in this person. And there's an incredible amount of interest in what Anthony Richardson does, pro and con. And it's just part of the responsibility of being the starting quarterback at the University of Florida.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, he realizes that now. It was a good, hard learning lesson for him to go through this. And yeah, and it wasn't like people said it was just a ticket. No, you know, when, as you mentioned, you know, doing 105 is not just a speeding ticket. That's danger zone. I mean, yeah. You know, you mentioned Henry Ruggs. You know, Ruggs was somewhat different because he was doing 150 and he was drunk. Anthony Richardson wasn't drunk, but you don't, it really doesn't matter. I mean, I remember Jerome Brown, you know, one of the greatest defensive players ever. You know, he died in a car in the middle of the day in a Corvette in Brooksville. He wasn't, you know, it's just, you're just so close to a total catastrophe when you're driving 105. And, you know, we've all been kids and, you know, 19, I don't want to be a hypocrite. I didn't drive 105 because my car wouldn't go that fast, but I did stupid things at 19, but I wasn't the starting quarterback at the University of Florida either.
Yeah. You had the anonymity that Richardson doesn't have. And he spoke, Richardson did, to Gators Online about the citation and taking ownership of it and how he felt about the headlines that came out. And he said that ultimately he does like being in the situation he's in because it makes him walk the straight and narrow and holds him to a higher standard. And I think that that message should reassure a lot of people that he does plan on learning from his mistake and doesn't plan on making this a habit of putting himself in these situations and just being at risk.
Well, the fact that there was no real harm done made this a good lesson.
Agreed.
You know, had he lost control or, you know, God forbid, hit somebody, it would not have been a good, and he would have learned his lesson the hard way.
Yeah.
And he'd be in jail now.
Yeah.
So, and I think he realizes that too, because, you know, you can lecture a 19, you know, kid forever, and, you know, sometimes you just have to go out and learn things the hard way. And he did, but without any real consequence that could have come with it.
Yeah. And all you can ask is that he expresses remorse and shows that he's going to move on from it and then assess how they do in the future. So we will certainly continue to monitor how Anthony Richardson does on and off the field, fair or not. That is just, like you said, the pedestal that you were on when you were under the spotlight at the University of Florida. We are going to take this first break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little more spring game, mainly the defense, what we saw out of some guys like Jalen Kimber, Jordan Young, some guys who impressed, as well as those middle linebackers. And in the final segment, we're going to talk basketball, recap Florida gymnastics being the runner-up in the national championship. We'll be right back after this break.
USA Today's Florida Sports Network covers the Sunshine State better than anyone else. We have reporters and columnists covering Florida, Florida State, and Miami, the Dolphins, Jaguars, and Bucks. Like NASCAR, we've got you covered. We also provide the most comprehensive high school coverage available, and so much more. In fact, we have 17 news sites that encompass the state. Hi, I'm Tim Walters, host of the State of Florida Sports Podcast. Each week, this podcast utilizes our Florida Sports Network of beat writers, columnists, and some special guests to bring you up to speed on the most important sports topics. From Pensacola to Jacksonville, to Palm Beach to Naples, and all points in between, we've got you covered. The State of Florida Sports Podcast can be found wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as on any of our state news sites.
We are back with the Gator Sports Podcast. I'm Graham Hall, joined to my left by David Whitley. And we're going to talk a little bit more of the orange and blue game, Billy Napier's first in Gainesville. In the first segment, we talked a lot about Anthony Richardson. He was the star of the show offensively. We did see some tight ends show out, so I don't want to forget about guys like Noah Keeter, Dante Zanders. Jaquavion Frazier was really good, too. Maybe a number two wide receiver for Florida.
They could use somebody to step forward in that position,
yeah,
that's for sure.
Certainly. Anytime you're winning a game 34-0, you're going to kind of think that there's going to be some undesirable defensive aspects. But I really did think, David, that there were some good things that the Gators can build off of defensively. I got to start with Jalen Kimber. That was a guy that I think went under the radar a little bit because he hadn't done much at Georgia, but a former four-star prospect, a top-10 corner in his class, and played in a program that just won the national championship. You know that he has a skill set, but was in an orange non-contact jersey for much of spring camp. Didn't really know how much he would be able to play in Thursday's game. He ended up looking fantastic.
He did, and he may have been, you know, the, like you said, the stealth surprise of the spring, because you know, anytime you get a guy with that kind of pedigree coming from a program like that, you figure, well, they're so stacked, you know, maybe he, best scenario, he's just not getting a chance there, and he wants to go somewhere where he does get a chance. And, you know, it's not quite a plug-and-play situation, but, you know, that they needed help at corner. And you're right. I mean, his coverage skills were, you know, as good as anybody's out there, and for a guy who's just been here for 6 weeks. And so that was a pleasant surprise. It is funny, though. You know, there are a lot of individuals that look good on defense, but the collective, you go, man, 34 to nothing. It's just weird because there's a lot to feel good about, but then you're sort of scratching your head on how, you know, Trent Whittemore, have they tackled him yet?
That's kind of Bailey Napier coming out and saying the Orange didn't really finish drives, but, you know, when you're a defender, you're trying to sit there and think like, oh, well, I had something to do with that. And, you know, another guy who certainly had something to do with the Orange getting shut out, give Jordan Young a lot of credit. The star nickel corner position, whatever you want to call it, just star in my mind, has gotten a reputation for being notoriously difficult for guys to master in the transition from playing that outside corner position, which is what Young played as in his freshman season, comes over and plays star. Still some uncertainty why he was the one who got the majority of the action, because Trevez Johnson and Dakota Mitchell were two guys who were training at that position after Jadarius Perkins went down in spring camp. They're not dressed out for the spring game. We don't know why. And Jordan Young, a guy who really hasn't played star, is over there, and he looked really, really good.
Hadn't played much of anything. In fact, when he came up, you know, post game, I had to check. Says who?
There were people. Yeah, there were people saying, "Who is this guy?" You know, and you know, no disrespect to Jordan, just it was his first appearance, and I think it was a little bit unexpected because, and this is a huge thing to mention, we really saw a coaching staff in spring that did not want to identify individual players unless they were asked about said individual player. And then they obviously offered up some information, but you didn't have coaches coming out and saying, oh, well, Jordan Young, you all need to keep an eye on him.
Very rarely. They didn't go out of the way to put anybody out there. And when you think about if, you know, Perkins, we don't know what his issue is, but you figure, you know, he'll be back for fall.
Hopefully he's on crutches. I don't know, man.
It's hard to say, but if they get him back, you know, and Jaden Hill is back out there, you know, he was a starting cornerback last year till he blew out his knee in preseason. Mm. If he gets back to, you know, he still has, he wasn't overly impressed for him, but he showed he can still, you know, it's the work in progress. And I think by fall camp, he should be, you know, it'll be a year since his ACL. So, you know, arguably between him and Jason Marshall, you know, and then they have, you know, if these other bodies come through, and then, like you said, there's actual some depth in the secondary. So, you know, you're thinking, they can work with that, you know, and you know, certainly there's been, you know, the safeties have had a rough career, but you're seeing, and they're saying the right things, and you're seeing glimpses that they're getting, you know, Trevez and Trey Dean, that. So between them all, you think, all right, there's enough to work with defensively in the secondary that they can do it. And, you know, then up front, you know, that's, you know, linebacker's okay, defensive front, question mark.
Yeah, interior of the defensive line, I thought, was a weakness in the game. I thought Jalen Lee looked pretty good. I thought Jervon Dexter, obviously, we knew what we were going to get out of him. But to have your middle linebackers, I mean, I guess you could spin it positively that you got some surefire tacklers in the middle of the field, and Amari Burney and Ventrell Miller, two guys that combined for 18 tackles. Amari Burney led all tacklers in the spring game with 11. Ventrell had 7. I mean, you take those guys, two fifth-year guys, and without them, Florida would really be, I think, in a difficult position because they're missing a really good nose tackle, and they are relying on two really good tacklers. Amari Burney has improved as a tackler. I think that is important to note. There were some issues there early in his career, but he really has improved in that regard. But without those guys, Florida would be in a lot more trouble. You're going to see them go for a defensive tackle here.
Yeah, two words like that. Transfer portal.
Yeah, got to get a fix in there.
Yeah, well, Napier said that what they're going to bring in, you know, a dozen guys, he thinks, through the transfer portal. And so this next week, you know, between now and May 1st, it's going to be, you're going to need a program to keep up, some numbers. They're not QR codes like UCF.
Yeah.
Back on that, but
it's a good distraction, right?
Yeah. There's going to be some personnel changes, and they're out there, I'm sure, drumming up the portal because, like we talked last week, they bought in two ready-made defensive tackles last year, and they, with Valentino and Newkirk, and that they took care of one. You say they could use a couple of guys like that this year.
Yeah, I think that you can't do that year in and year out, go in and go get a transfer portal guy that's going to be a defensive tackle, and then you don't identify the position on the recruiting trail, because then again, the next year you're going to do the same thing. Florida really has had to do that. They have had to go in and get defensive tackles year in and year out, really since they had to go out there and get Adam Shuler from West Virginia right before the season, plugged him in. Then he ends up being an NFL player. And now the year after that, Antonio Valentino, Daquan Newkirk, mm-hmm. You're going on another year where they're going to have to do that.
I think
it's
more worrisome before, because you're dealing with a staff that had been in here, a regime, as we say, for a couple of years, and they should have had the recruiting pipeline set up to where they didn't have to go do the plug and play thing. Now, I mean, Napier really has no choice.
Yeah.
And if he's doing this in 2 years, I think that's a red flag for sure. But for now, I mean, basically, right in front, they're in survival mode. And if there are a couple of lifeboats out there, you're going to grab them.
Yeah. And he certainly could maybe go find some diamonds in the rough in a form of a walk-on. We got to talk about the walk-ons real quick here before we take this final break, because some of them really did, I think, show out in the spring game. I mentioned him right before we started this segment. Noah Keeter, a guy who, out of Buchholz, a local guy, 6'5", played weak side defensive end, goes out there, outside linebacker, goes to UCLA, top five school. You got to have those good grades to get in there. Really isn't getting the playing time he's thinking that he's going to get, doesn't have an opportunity, and transfers back to Gainesville to join the Gators as a preferred walk-on prior to last season. Now, he's one of those guys moved to tight end with Dante Zanders and Griffin McDowell. I don't know if he ends up getting put on scholarship, but the way he looked throughout the spring and then catching a pass, he caught the longest pass of the spring game, a 29-yarder down the right sideline there from Richardson. He could be brought on scholarship. I mean, that's one that you have to watch out for, because you can't, due to numbers, just go out there and get as many transfer portal guys as you want and say, oh, you're going to get a scholarship. They're going to have to take some walk-ons who can play here too.
Yeah, that the whole tight end thing sort of got turned on its head in the last week, because we were thinking, oh, there's Zipper and nobody, which was pretty much the case. And, I mean, Zanders, Napier said he's the story of the spring.
Yeah.
Because, he's arguably their starting tight end now. He got ahead of Zipper. I mean, he looked like, a guy had been playing that position for years.
Right.
And the fact that, that was such a glaring need, and now you're feeling, oh, okay, maybe, it's not that big of a concern. I mean, you always want to get better. But between him and they've signed a couple of young tight ends, that are coming in, that won't be a weak spot anyway.
Yeah, it looks less glaring of a weakness right now coming out of the spring game than it did when we got the news that Gage Wilcox, Nick Elksness, Jonathan Odom went down, trio of guys all got injured. When I spoke to Dante Zanders, I talked to him, that's on Gatorsports.com and in the Gainesville Sun, he said he was baffled to see three guys go down in quick succession. You just don't really see that too much. Maybe it's a sign that the practices were a little bit more physical under the new regime, but that's just, you don't see that very often. Three guys in one room.
I know.
He took advantage of that.
Oh, sure. He did. But even though, you hear guys switching positions all the time, but just for him to look so natural at it was a weird thing.
Yeah.
And it's because he had played it for a couple of years,
but
he had played on that. Yeah.
Not too long. He said he hadn't gone out and caught a pass since changing back to defensive line. I mean, didn't go out there, work on his routes, work with a jugs machine. I mean, it was strictly working on his defensive line skills. I mean, very unlikely.
Yeah, the other walk-on that caught my eye was the kicker.
Adam Mihalik, yes.
I mean, holy goodness. Kicking has been, as obviously, not exactly a strength the last year.
No.
And for him, he obviously didn't have a great leg, but it looks like he has an accurate leg.
Yeah, and Chris Howard comes back, and I think a lot of people were thinking that he would possibly challenge Trey Smack, the freshman arrivee coming on campus here in summer, for the job. And then you get Adam Mihalik, who goes out. Well, first, wait, let's backtrack. Howard misses a 32-yarder, which I mean, man, playing your own team, no circumstances, a 32-yard chip shot. I mean, that's like an extra point in the NFL, man.
That's worrisome. And you're thinking, and we hadn't seen anybody else. So you're looking down the thing and says, you know, who is Mihalik? Who are all the? But you know, Mihalik came in and he, you know, made a 52-yarder. You know, barely, but that's all.
A 52-yarder.
Any coach would love to have a guy who's consistent from the 50 in,
yeah,
or even the 40 in. Yeah, you know, if you get that, that's fine. And you know, Trace Mack, the freshman who will be coming in, he's got a good leg, so you figure maybe he'll win the job, but at least you figure he's going to have to win it now.
Yeah, the combination of the leg and accuracy is the rare thing that puts kickers into the NFL and makes them desirable rather than just kind of roster pieces who can be moved around at any point in the season. You may have that with Mihalik, who is going to put the pressure on whoever that scholarship kicker is ahead of him, whether it's Howard, whether it's Trace Mack. I mean, knowing you have a guy who hit a 52-yarder, which ties the longest field goal in Orange and Blue game history. Chris Hetland hit one in 2006 from 52, and Eddie Pinheiro hit one from 52 yards out in 2016. And now the walk-on, Adam Mihalik, is in that elite company. Not only did he hit a 52-yarder, he followed it up by hitting a 49-yard field goal. I mean, just incredibly impressive to do that. You may have made a case that you're going to be the guy that they're going to give a look to, and a walk-on kicker, that is pretty unlikely. You got to say that's very impressive to me.
Yeah, and you know, we said that was a concern, and we will see. But you know, at least a guy, they've got to have a guy who can make the ones you have to make. I mean, 50 and over. Yeah, you want to make
you'll
it.
You'll take those,
but 50 and in, certainly 40 and in, you have to have those.
Yeah, they can be decisive.
Yeah, and you know, you could even have a dual kicking situation if Smack, you know, if you've got the good leg, he can handle the kickoffs.
Two kicker system, I like it.
Yeah, something like that. I mean,
yeah, because Mihalik did struggle.
Yeah, they don't have a guy who can boom the ball.
Yeah, they need someone. You know, Jace Chrisman, I thought, had a really good leg. He hit a 60-yarder at Pro Day, but he kind of wasn't great on field goals. That's what led to Chris Howard kind of having a shot in there, and now you may have a situation where Trace Mack or Howard has to do kickoffs, and maybe Mihalik is your long shot guy when you have a chance. Mm-hmm. We're going to talk long shots in a different sport. We're going to talk men's basketball when we come back. Roster moves when we take this final break. There have been a lot of them, David. There have been a lot of them. I hope you've been following along, because this team looks incredibly different than what you just saw out of this game.
I heard they have a new coach.
Yeah, they have a new coach. They got a few other pieces. But we're going to talk about all that here when we take this final break. We'll be right back.
I'm Blake Topmeyer, and this is SEC Football Unfiltered, a new podcast from the USA Today Network. Each week, we'll discuss the hottest topics that matter to the passionate fan bases of the SEC. I've covered the SEC for 8 years. As for my co-host, longtime sports columnist John Adams, let's just say he's got a few decades on me.
Not as many decades as some people think. Contrary to popular opinion, I did not cover General Nealon. But I did interview Bear Bryant, and I interviewed Nick Saban, and I covered Archie Manning and Peyton Manning.
More insightful interview, John. Bear Bryant, Archie Manning, Steve Spurrier, or Johnny Majors?
Got to go with Steve Spurrier there. He's the great quipster.
SEC Football Unfiltered debuts this summer. Let John and I be your tour guides from the season opener through the national championship. Subscribe and listen wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back with the final segment of this episode of the Gator Sports Podcast, presented by the Gainesville Sun. I am your host, Graham Hall, joined to my left by David Whitley.
Hola.
And now we are going to be talking some Florida men's basketball, as well as a little gymnastics here at the end to recount how Fort Worth went for the Gators. But Todd Golden's first roster in Gainesville is really starting to take shape. To recount, last week the Gators added Will Richard out of Belmont University, the first addition for Todd Golden, but he wasn't done there. This past week, he got Alex Fudge, the LSU transfer, a Jacksonville native, as well as a commitment from Colin Castleton. I think that you look at those first three additions right there, that is a very, very strong start, getting your low post threat, and then two guys who were considered to be two of the top 15 or so transfers on the market right now, and now you get both of them along with Castleton back in Gainesville.
Yeah, I mean, well, of course, Castleton was the foundational piece. And with him, when he came back, I don't want to say it was all gravy from there, but it sure made everything after that easier. And talent wants to play with talent, and knowing that Castleton is there, that doesn't help when Todd Golden goes out and pitches and said, hey, you know, we've got arguably the best low post man in the SEC coming back. You want to play with him.
It certainly helps the recruiting push to say, hey, listen, look at who you're going to have alongside you, especially if you're going to play the four spot. We're going to have a guy that is going to be able to work as a pick and roll guy and also be a defensive threat on the other end. That is just a huge selling point for a lot of these guys. You know, a 6'8 wing like Alex Fudge, there are some guys that size that are pushed to play the four spot rather than play on the wing, where they probably are going to play at the next level if they make it there. So a lot of these 6'8", 6'7 forwards are resisting being put at that four spot. So when you can get guys who are willing to play the four, you have a better chance of adding wings like Fudge. Yeah. I think that was a huge thing, as well as the proximity. Those things combined, as well as Todd Golden's system, got to think that's a huge reason.
And Fudge is intriguing because he didn't have the great, just a freshman year, but he's one of those guys you look at and you just see the big P word, potential. And that's what got him to LSU, and that's why he was such a highly ranked guy in the transfer portal, because you're just seeing this is the kind of guy, if he develops, who has NBA potential, and he's not proven yet, but LSU was a pretty good team last year, and they were stacked and going away and all that, but that's one thing about the transfer portal is that he went there, but I would suspect, being from Jacksonville, when you get in a transfer portal, one place you're going to look right away is somewhere where you have a relationship,
yeah,
and somewhere where it's close to home, and so I think Florida came up and it fit with him, and actually we went to the same high school too in Jacksonville. Yes.
Oh wow.
Robert E. Lee High School.
Right there. Wow.
Which is, they had to change its name.
Yeah,
last
they got
to
do that.
But we both graduated as Robert E. Lee.
Wow.
So forgive us, people.
I think you'll get a pass for that out of your control. But they now have Fudge in their control. Yeah. That's a huge thing for Todd Golden. I think for him, not getting away from the SEC was something that had to be very desirable. I mean, you don't want to lower your competition so that then they can knock you for the competition you played against in a couple of years. He certainly was not the only addition that we have seen recently. On Monday night, this was a kind of surprising one to me, but he did take an official visit. But anytime you see someone commit from the Cadets of the Virginia Military Institute, you can kind of be like, okay, is he able to make it in the SEC? And then you see he's 6 feet, 170. That's Trey Bonham.
Yeah.
He committed to the Gators on Monday afternoon. His transfer has now been finalized as of Tuesday morning. He gives Florida a guy heading into his junior year who, in his 2 years with VMI, started 31 games, looked really, really good in most of those appearances. He averaged more than a steal a game. He's able to do it all. Good three-point shooter, good from the free throw line, and I think would fit really good in the high-tempo system that Todd Golden is looking to run. How well he will adjust to the competition, like I said, remains to be seen, but an intriguing addition for the Gators, and now they do have their point guard. Yeah. He's expected to have a chance to be the starting point guard next year.
Yeah, and the things you mentioned, the three-point efficiency and the free throw efficiency. I'm sure that made the light bulb go off in Golden's mind, because he is Mr. Analytics, and that's what he was in college.
Right.
He realized this is how I'm going to make my mark, and he realized, and this is the kind of player, exactly what he's looking for. And you're right, the step up from mid-major to SEC to Power Five, you never know. I mean, you're stepping up, but this guy's played 2 years. And unlike Fudge, who looks potential, this guy has been on the court, and his stats are good, decent. And it's an area of need, a point guard. And I think we'll see a lot of him this fall.
I think so too. Two guys that we won't see a lot of this fall are two incoming freshmen that the Gators signed back in November. The first we've talked about, Malik Renu. He, the Hialeah native who transferred to IMG Academy, he opened up his commitment after initially saying that he was 110% committed to the Gators. He now has decided to go to Indiana University.
I hear he's 112% committed to the Hoosiers.
That may make the difference, that extra 2%. Coach Mike Woodson up there, Indiana, now has a five-star signee in Malik. And Florida's other forward signee, Jalen Reed, the 6'10 forward, he now He's playing out there in California, actually. He now is opening up his recruitment. He announced Monday night that he was going to look elsewhere, and the Gators had released him from his signed letter of intent, although he did specify that Florida remains an option. He got a little bit of backlash from that decision, considering it's so late. Signing day is already passed it's going to be on Wednesday, so one more day, and a lot of programs have already made their official decisions with roster moves. And so his mom went out on social media today and said, "Why is it when a kid wants to see other options, it's such a bad thing? Why does everyone assume because of other players after the addition of Trey Bonham? One thing about my kid, trust him, believe him, he isn't worried about the next man. I've always told him, handle his business and you're good." So you're having now a situation where a young kid is competing with all these transfer portal guys, and after signing to a program 6 months ago, he's now looking for a new home. I mean, so much has changed in the Florida program. I think that he deserves the right to do that. The timing may be undesirable, but it is his timeline, ultimately.
Oh, sure. And this is the chance you take when you have a change of regime. There's the plus and there's the minus. You know, he signed with Mike White. And he had a relationship there, and I'm sure that Todd Golden has tried to build a relationship quickly, but apparently he couldn't quite play the Prince Charming role to the necessary degree. So the kid, for whatever reason, he has every right to say, "I may not be happy there," and look around. It's like anybody, if you're looking at it, you're interviewing for a job and you have, you committed to the one thing, but then you see, well, gosh, they bought in three other guys who might be as good as me or better, and my cubicle is getting pushed further and further down the row. Said, maybe I want to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
So no harm looking around. And of course, his mom's going to say that. If she wasn't, she wouldn't have been a good mom. But I mean, she spoke the truth, too. I mean, let the guy look around. And he didn't shut it down. And, if he can come in and Todd Golden can sell him on it, well, okay. If not, case for all, that's just the downside with the proverbial regime change.
Yeah, there's going to be competition also, no matter what level you're at in basketball, football, you name it. And to say that someone is so-and-so scared of the talent coming in, I've never really bought that too much because it just doesn't really fly for me.
Well, that's not the kind of guy you want to sign.
Yeah, right? And if they're scared by the competition, then it's kind of like, okay, well, you've saved us a big headache down the line. So that is going to be two players that are not going to make it to Gainesville that 6 months ago looked like that they were going to be part of Mike White's signing class, and now they're not going to be joining Todd Golden unless Reed does decide to come back to Gainesville. We got to include that. That is still an option. We just saw that with Amarius Mims, the number one transfer portal target in college football, deciding to go back to Georgia after flirting with FSU in Miami. So it's certainly a possibility that Jalen sees what all is out there and opts to come back. We saw what the Florida gymnastics team had out there in Fort Worth, Texas, and it unfortunately was not enough to win the national championship. If you watched on Saturday, the Gators were one of the final four teams facing off against Utah, Auburn, and Oklahoma. The number one seed Sooners started at the bottom of the rankings after the first rotation. They were in fourth before winning the next three events, posting the highest scores in the next three events to come from behind and win the 2022 national championship. That's the fifth title in program history for the Oklahoma Sooners. It was so close for Florida, though. Trinity Thomas had a 10 on floor. It was fantastic all season long, her 12th 10 of the season, but the Sooners were just a little bit better.
Yeah, when you look at the Florida program, the past few NCAAs, they had to come away feeling, we blew it. To a certain extent, or we didn't come through. You want to say that they choked, but 2 years ago they didn't even make the Final Four for the second time in 32 years. And last year they fell off the beam, and things just didn't work out well. And you can come back and they could kick themselves. This time I think it was different. I think they went out there and they really, I don't want to say play. It's always hard to find the verb for them. Gymnasticized well, pretty well. But Oklahoma was just a better team, slightly better.
Yeah.
But it wasn't one of those things where Florida lost it as Oklahoma won it.
Yeah, it was their first loss of the season, and obviously the worst timing for the Florida team. That is going to do it, though, for us for this episode of the Gator Sports Podcast. We will be back in the near future to keep talking Florida offseason, baseball. We didn't even get to baseball today because it really has been kind of down in the dumps.
We don't want to be negative.
But yeah, we don't want to be too negative and be labeled those negative journalists out there that you all hate so much. But we will be back pretty soon to talk more Florida Gators. Thank you for listening. Take care.